to conclude our discussion on the Balfour Declaration and the consequent impact it has had on the socio-political structure of Palestine, we speak to the Palestinian ambassador to the UK, Manuel Hassassi Yin, and get feedback from the ground from youth activist Aid at Maui. To begin, Hassassi Yin provides insight into the impact of the occupation on the fabric of Palestine and Israel's plan as seen from the Palestinian perspective.
The impact of occupation for the last 50 years has definitely dislocated our civil society, and it had, left many detriments on the national ethos, let alone the national identity of the Palestinians, because of the systematic policies of the Israelis, from demolishing of houses, extrajudicial killings, and all kinds of practices that made life impossible for the Palestinians, who are scattered, basically in the West Bank in three clusters, what we call Bantustans, because with no geographic contiguity, with the separation of East Jerusalem from the West Bank and the separation of Gaza from the West Bank, it is impossible today to talk about a two-state solution, given the fact that there is also the apartheid wall, which has been built on Palestinian land, 10 kilometers deep into the West Bank. So from that perspective, for the last 24 years, we have been embarked on a peace process that proved nothing except dismal failure and the building of more settlements, which created much more complexity as to how to implement a two-state solution when Israel controls basically all the West Bank. And with such a regime in Israel today, which is a regime of extreme settlers and right-wingers, I think the idea of two-state solution is being aborted by the Israeli side. Now, what are the other alternatives? The other alternatives are a one-state solution. The one-state solution, according to the Palestinians, is a one democratic secular state where Jews, Muslims, and Christians will live side by side in a democratic entity. But that in itself is not, accepted by Israel for the simple fact that the element of demography will, in one way or another, eliminate the exclusivity of a Jewish state. And this is what Israel wants. Wants to build an exclusive Jewish state, holding on to the geography of Palestine and getting rid of the natural inhabitants of the Palestinians. So I see things are getting more and more complicated, and Israel is getting away with impunity, regardless of the recent Security Council resolution dealing with the settlements being, unlawful and the breach of international law, resolution 2334. Israel did not pay any heed. The international community is not using any mechanisms of pressure on Israel in order to rescind and to stop the process of creeping annexation and building settlements, because the settlements are now basically cancerous all over the West Bank, like a Swiss cheese. And from that perspective, I can tell you that almost 660,000 settlers live in the occupied territories. 430,000 live in the West Bank, and 230 live in the environs of Jerusalem and Jerusalem itself. Now, you're talking about 660,000 settlers occupying almost, the West Bank and occupying East Jerusalem and what have you, which makes it even much more difficult now to deal with the Israelis on the issue of withdrawal and dismantlement of settlements. And what is the international community doing besides, moral sympathy and empathy? Nothing. We haven't seen Israel being under pressure through BDS, sanctions, boycott, divestments, and what have you. There are some symbolic gestures like that, but that in itself has not really been full of impact on Israel to change and alter its policies and to go back to the negotiating table. And Israel does not realize that a military solution will never be a resolution to this conflict.
Given the role of Britain in effectively transforming the geopolitics of numerous countries, Ambassador Hassassi Yin discusses the impact of Britain's role in what many describe as the intrusion and expropriation of Palestinian land.
The essence of the Palestinian question goes back to 1917, when Arthur Balfour who then was the foreign minister of Great Britain, issued an infamous declaration that was detrimental to the Palestinian people, which ended up in their destitution and yet occupation by Israel. Balfour, you know, in his declaration, promised a national home for the Jews with respect to the civil and religious rights of the non-Jewish minorities. Imagine, the irony of history is that 98.5% of the population were Palestinian Arabs and were referred to as non-Jewish minority. What a disgrace this infamous declaration had really, you know, been on the Palestinian history. Now, Balfour Declaration was also legitimized in the League of Nations in 1920 when the British became the mandatory power over Palestine. And for almost 30 years, the Brits in Palestine had facilitated basically the process of the what the Jews call the Jewish Aliyah, which is the Jewish immigration to Palestine, and left in 1947 to the United Nations to deal with the issues after settling the infrastructure of the Zionist colonies in Palestine. And that in itself, you know, is considered to be a historic and moral responsibility on the part of the British government. And to add insult to injury is the fact that this British government is going to celebrate the centenary of the Balfour Declaration, which is, you know, the 100 years. And the marking of this is a continuation of a slap in the face of the Palestinians and its leadership that the British government is still acknowledging and taking pride and praise in the creation of the State of Israel. Now, we can't understand, you know, the hypocrisy of such policies when they say they are for a two-state solution, when they say settlements are, you know, illegal, and they invite the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, to come and celebrate the creation of Israel through this infamous declaration called Balfour. And I think this hypocrisy and the double standards of the British government today is not appreciated by the Palestinians, neither is appreciated by our allies, including South Africa.
While the Palestinian-Israeli conflict has long been tabled within the upper echelons of politics, those on the ground very often go unnoticed, resulting in a vacuum of real experiences being ignored. We spoke to youth activist Eid Atmawi of the Palestinian Peace Coalition Geneva Initiative in Palestine, a group that works to open dialogue amongst youth. Atmawi discusses the Balfour Declaration from the perspective of the youth.
The declaration itself, it paved the way for the creation of the State of Israel. It promised a national land or a national home. It did create, or it did pave the way, and it did help in creating the State of Israel. But on the other side, on the Palestinian side, it caused more harm than good, of course. After more than 100 years or 100 years now, there is an Israeli government, an Israeli system, an Israeli state. But there is no Palestinian state. There is nothing achieved on the Palestinian side. The beginning of the whole story, the beginning of the whole situation that the Balfour Declaration caused in Palestine, it didn't mention anything about the indigenous people or the people who are already living there. And when it was mentioned, either through communication between the superpowers or in the declaration itself, it called them communities. It never looked at them or saw them as, considered them a nation or people. So what happened in the past 100 years was basically a realization or a translation, if we can say this, a translation of the words that came in that declaration, that Palestinians or Arabs communities do not enjoy the same rights that the other community that was coming from abroad, of course, from Europe and other places, that the other community enjoyed. So what did it do? What did it cause on the Palestinian side? Long story short, it made the Palestinian life a living hell, and it also wasn't balanced because the situation on the ground itself is not balanced between both sides. It made the situation even worse for people who are already living in Palestine.
Ambassador Hassassi Yin comments on the role of diplomatic relations between Palestinians and the UK on the foreign policy of the UK government.
Here, I represent the Palestinian people. I represent the President Mahmoud Abbas, the PLO, and the Palestinian Authority. So I am an ambassador, but I did not submit my credentials to St. James Court, because the UK does not recognize the state of Palestine. They recognize us by de facto and not by de jure. So by international law, the UK does not recognize the state of Palestine. However, you have to understand that we have had this recognition since 1974 in the United Nations, when the PLO was recognized as the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people. And as a result of a speech given to the late Yasser Arafat in Geneva in 1974, we have been given the privilege of having embassies and legations and general delegations all over the world. So the question of us, who we are, is something goes beyond our back. We are not really now seeking legitimacy of recognition by Britain, because we are recognized by 140 countries in the latest General Assembly resolution. Now, what we are requesting in lieu of the apology to the Palestinian people for this declaration that has been detrimental to our history and to our status quo is the fact that we need Great Britain to recognize the state of Palestine. Now, at the parliamentary level, this recognition took place 3 years ago, and we have been recognized by the British Parliament as a state. However, as a government, still we are struggling to get, you know, that recognition. And we will continue to lobby until we get that recognition, because it's only through recognition that we give legitimacy to UK's involvement with the Palestinian issue. And why do I say that? If they are for the two-state solution, how come when they recognize by de jure the state of Israel, they don't recognize the Palestinians? How could we have a parity level of negotiation when the international community, i.e. US, UK, and European countries, are not recognizing the state of Palestine, yet they are pushing for a two-state solution? This is double standards, ridiculous, cannot be accepted. It's a humiliation and insult to our intelligence to see such policies being practiced upon us.
Echoing Ambassador Hassasi Yin, Atmawi says that Palestinian diplomatic efforts have contributed to the evident leniency on the part of the British government toward Palestinians.
There has been some leniency from British politicians lately. And yes, the Palestinian diplomacy contributed to this change in the diplomatic relations, this change when it comes to the UK official stance towards Palestine. It's changing in every spot in Europe, not just in the UK. I think it all started back in 2011 when the Palestinians decided to step up the fight, the diplomatic fight, the diplomatic missions.
Given widespread campaigning by pro-Palestinian activists, Hassasi Yin says that popular opinion for the Palestinian cause is steadily increasing.
When I was appointed here in 2005 as the representative of the Palestinian people, the popular vote in public opinion towards the Palestinians was around 30%. In 2015, I received an award as the best ambassador who raised consciousness about this country, because the public opinion shifted from 30% dramatically to 70%, which means that on the popular level, the Palestinians are being supported by the public here at large, but at the government level, we are not basically recognized as a state. At the parliamentary level, we are recognized as a state. Well, at the party levels, Labour, Liberal Dem, Scottish National Party, all of them recognize the state of Palestine. So it is Theresa May's government is the one which is considered to be an obstacle to the full recognition of the Palestinian state. Last November, the embassy with almost 25 NGOs, solidarity campaign movements, embarked on a campaign for a whole year to promote against the Balfour Declaration. And as a matter of fact, we have declarations to sign, petitions. Almost we have 2 million people signed that petition for an apology for the Palestinian people for what Balfour has done. And on the other hand, this campaign is continuing with lectures, raising consciousness, giving speeches, conferences, you know, in the parliament, in universities, and I have been doing that extensively recently.
Commenting on calls for Britain to apologize for the Balfour Declaration, both the ambassador and the youth activist say that apologizing is the absolute minimum that the British government owes the people of Palestine.
I think this is the minimum that the British owe the Palestinian people. A simple, you know, apology is not going, basically, to put Britain, you know, under the scope of the international community that this great country has apologized to unarmed Palestinian civilians who have been, you know, suffering under occupation. I think the greatness of a country is to come forward and submit this apology to a people that have suffered enough under occupation. As it stands, I had a meeting with the Minister for the Middle East, Mr. Tobias Elwood, and he told me in person, we are not going to apologize, and we are going to mark the Balfour Declaration because the Balfour is part of our British history. This is, I mean, a slap in the face. I was baffled and stunned when I heard that statement, and I said, Mr. Tobias, we will continue to put our pressures until you will one day realize that you have committed a crime against the Palestinians by the creation of Israel at the expense of the destitution of our people. You are going to shoulder this responsibility, this moral responsibility, as long as Britain exists. And I assure you, Mr. Tobias, the fact that the Palestinians, with their steadfastness, fighting occupation, one day they are going to get their freedom as other people got their freedoms along the street.
Theresa May is basically supporting openly Trump, who's basically being an anti-Islam everywhere he goes, and also she has her own policies against immigrants, and not to mention the fact that she supports a lot of countries that are not democratic. Yes, we demand that they apologize for what they did, for the harm that they caused to the Palestinian people, but at the same time, me personally, I'm not that optimistic, and I don't think that they will do something like that, at least not now, not the current leadership.
Youth activist at Maui says that the British powers assisted in the creation of the State of Israel in order that they may establish an ally within the region that would speak to their needs.
It was so clear, actually, when Balfour himself was communicating with Curzon, his successor, of course, and when he stated clearly in his letters that Zionism is more important or more important than the 700,000 people who are already living in Palestine. So the interest for UK in this area was basically with the establishment of an Israeli state, and this is why the whole thing started. So I don't think that a colonizing power would care, you know, much for the interest and the well-being and the culture or the history or the aspirations of people who are already living in an area. What they wanted is creating a state, establishing an ally who won't question them, who will always be part of their plans in this area.
At Maui, and Ambassador Hassassi Hin discussed the viability of a two-state solution, which they describe as a severed dream.
Palestinians now don't really believe that the two-state solution is viable. They want a two-state solution. They support a two-state solution, I mean, especially the youth. But at the same time, they're learning every day that doesn't work. They're learning that the two-state solution is becoming less viable with every second that we wait. Not only that, but you have Israeli politicians in the Knesset who are basically living in Israeli settlements, Israeli illegal settlements built in the Palestinian private land. So with the current leadership, and if we're just talking about a two-state solution, a very simple formula to end the conflict, you have these people saying no to this solution. How would they know, or why would they say okay or yes to a solution that basically puts them on the same level with Palestinians? Equality, this is not exactly in their agenda or on their agenda. They don't really believe in equality. They don't really believe that a Palestinian has the right, for example, to go to the Knesset and then to vote for a representative.
For the last 25 years, we made our painful historic concession. When we accepted the State of Israel and recognized the State of Israel over 78% of historic Palestine, and we embarked on a tormentuous journey of negotiations that had been political diktat and not negotiations, you know, between two partners to the conflict, with unequivocal support of the United States that is supposed to be a third party, an honest broker of peace, eventually sided with Israel all along the negotiations. So I can say there was no negotiations. And the two-state solution was blessed by the international community, as you know, in certain resolutions. And let alone the Oslo agreement that we signed, the PLO signed with Israel, is a good verification, basically, that both Israelis and Palestinians had accepted the idea of a two-state solution. But you see, between 1994, when we signed the Oslo Agreement, until today, Israel made every kind of move to abort the two-state solution by building an apartheid wall, by grabbing more land, building more settlements. Today, as I tell you, there are 140 settlements with 660,000 settlers living on them. The size and number of settlers have quadrupled since we embarked on the peace process. This shows the intention that Israel is not interested in a two-state solution. Israel wants a one-state solution, one democratic system, and an apartheid system against, you know, the Palestinian 5 million people. And that in itself cannot be, you know, accepted. What we are asking for is 22% of historic Palestine. And what happened since then is the fact that Israel had changed the facts on the ground. They have concretized the status quo and of occupation. And this is what they believe in, what's their solution. For us, I mean, now, if Israel goes back to the negotiations and clinches a deal on a two-state solution, my leadership is still willing to go ahead with a two-state solution.
Is there hope for assimilation between the two communities?
Under the current circumstance, and me listening and talking to a lot of Palestinian youth, I can say that I don't think that the current situation would allow something like this to happen. One state means equal rights. As I said, I don't want to repeat myself, but one state means equal rights, and the Israelis are not ready for accepting the Palestinians as citizens, as their equal. And we are seeing this. We are feeling this. We are experiencing this on a daily basis. The Israeli community is not even ready 100% for the two-state solution.
We in the Middle East, we can forgive and forget, and that could work out eventually because we have no choice. This is a small country with two peoples, with two nationalities and three religions. They have to live in coexistence with each other once there is peace, once there is recognition of each other. And there would be, you know, religious tolerance, let alone there would be an interaction between our two civil societies. Don't forget that the majority of the Israelis are of Middle East origin. They speak Arabic, they have the same culture. So we're not talking about, you know, a total assimilation with the Western culture by a traditional neo-patriarchal, you know, culture like that of the Palestinians. So I wouldn't really try to think ahead whether that social cohesion is going to take place or not. But the first thing is that we need our independent state. I think, you know, borders should be open. A NAFTA agreement should be signed between Palestinians and Israelis because economically they need each other and that of the Arab world to prosper. And that is the ideal situation if peace, you know, ever prevails in our part of the world.
As the British government prepares to celebrate the Balfour Declaration, the document that essentially laid the foundation for the establishment of the State of Israel, one thing that is clear is that the future of Palestine remains uncertain. The hope of a liberated Palestine now lays in the hands of a strangling occupation, fractured political structure, and a generation of youth ready to sacrifice their lives for their right to self-determination. For VOC News, I'm Zakira Desai.